This podcast was recorded on Kaurna land. We acknowledge the Kaurna people as the original custodians of the land and pay our respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
If you get to bed and you find that, you know, the reading of your favourite book or all those sorts of things don't help, then I think it's just trying to not allow yourself to slip into that catastrophizing that can happen, where you then start to tell yourself all sorts of bad things are going to happen because you haven't had enough sleep. So I think it's really to be mindful of that and to be kind to yourself. You will probably get through the next day okay, and you'll just sleep much better the following night.
You'll want to make a note.
Should you be taking notes or something?
You got a pencil? Write this down, quick.
Why aren't you taking notes?
Write this down.
Aren't you going to write this down?
Did you need me to take notes?
Please take note.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Take Note. We are the podcast where we give you the best notes on everything you need to know from the day you start uni to the day you graduate. My name is Shannon and I'm your host, but I'm also an honours student studying media here at the University of Adelaide. It is exam time and we hear you, you are freaking stressed. So let's take a step back and look at how you can take care of yourself during this time with a deep dive into the world of sleep. You can even take this podcast as a bit of an excuse to shut your eyes and get a little rest in. Just a quick note on today's episode. It was recorded via phone, but we just wanted to chat with Siobhan so badly. We just knew we needed to make this happen for you, and I promise it is worth it, and I cannot wait to get into this one. Sleep often falls to the bottom of the priority pile when we are neck deep in assignments, but what impact does that have on us? And should sleep be higher up on the list of priorities during those times? We have Professor Siobhan Banks, who is an expert in sleep and director of the Behaviour Brain Body Research Centre at UniSA, on the podcast today. Welcome on, Siobhan. It's so exciting to have you.
Hello. Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you. I think we'll just jump straight in. So what is the ideal amount of sleep for someone, or does it sort of differ between each person?
Oh, gosh, that certainly is the golden question and the one that everybody wants to have an answer to. And unfortunately, I'm going to say it depends because, yes, there are significant individual differences, and then even within a person, the amount of sleep you need does change quite a lot depending on your age, what you've been doing that day, so how busy you've been or how stressed you feel, what kind of cognitive load you've had, whether you've been sick. All of those sorts of things can modulate your sleep need from day to day. But if we're sort of talking generally, a whole bunch of experts got together a number of years ago now and sort of came up with this consensus statement around how much sleep generally they think people should be getting. And it's somewhere between that sort of six and a half, 7 hours to 8 hours. And that's based on some laboratory research and also looking at studies that have correlated out in the general community. So these would be like survey studies or questionnaire studies where they ask people how much sleep they get, or they track people and monitor how much sleep they get, and then look at whether they're at risk for developing cardiovascular disease, metabolic disease, that sort of thing. So they sort of came up with this general consensus statement, and they did that for each kind of rough age range, because there's quite a bit of difference actually between how much a baby needs or a teenager needs or an adult needs, or as even as you age.
Totally. I noticed that when variable. I turned 25, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did
I definitely
it go down or go up?
It went down in that I felt like I could function better on less sleep. Going into 25, I felt like my brain sort of ticked over.
That's really interesting because obviously, maybe not so obviously for those not in the brain sciences, but for those of us in the brain sciences, we know that around that age is when there are some changes that occur in the brain, some sort of maturation processes that occur. And so that's not entirely surprising because we would say that's when probably adulthood, full adulthood sort of starts. And up until that time, we sort of have adolescence and then sort of slightly older adolescence or younger adult. And those ranges are a little bit different. And certainly the sleep need is higher in those sort of teenage years. But also interestingly, in that age range, there are changes to your circadian rhythm. So people tend to, as they sort of come into their teenage years, want to stay up a bit later and sleep in. So not only do you feel like you want to sleep more or feel like you need to sleep more, there's also that sort of change in when your sleep is placed in the day. And so a lot of parents get angry and say, oh, you know, my 17-year-old never gets out of bed. And a lot of that is very biologically driven. So you should just say to your parents, it's my biology. and yeah, it totally is a natural process. And it's really interesting. It's fascinating to me that sleep changes so much over the lifespan.
Yeah, yeah. And I totally relate to that a range of hours as well, depending on what you've had during that day. Because there are some times where, you know, I've had days where I've just been at home all day and I haven't really exerted a lot of energy, so I don't need as much sleep. But then other days where it's, you know, I'll get 8 hours sleep and feel completely dead still the next day.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes that can actually be quite a long process. So sometimes you're, you know, you're at home not doing too much during the day because you're actually trying to recover a bit from a very busy period, and that busy period can take a bit of a toll on your sleep, and it can take a little while to recover. So I think this is the other thing when people kind of go, I don't know, you know, I had a, you know, really long sleep last night, I slept for 9 hours, why don't I feel great today? And there's a whole lot of processes that feed into that, a whole lot of different factors, one of them being we're often chronically sleep restricted. And so when we do get an opportunity for recovery, we probably actually need multiple nights to recover. We shouldn't pin too much hopes on just one single night.
Yeah. Yeah. So what does actually happen within our brains when we are getting a full night's sleep?
Well, it's really interesting. You can look at a number of different, you can kind of conceptualize this, I suppose, in a number of different ways. So there's measurement of sleep. So if you were to have a sleep study, for example, they would put a whole load of little electrodes on your scalp, which would measure the tiny little electrical signals that your brain gives off when the neurons fire. And so as you go to sleep, it's really fascinating to watch someone go to sleep. This is how I totally fell in love with this whole area, was watching people sleep. Sounds creepy, but it's fascinating because everybody's brain is a little bit different. And what you can see is that there are a number of distinct stages to your sleep. And people have probably heard about deep sleep or what's called non-REM sleep, which is non-rapid eye movement sleep. Then there's REM sleep or rapid eye movement sleep. And then there's some other stages where there's some lighter sleep that occurs. And essentially your brain sort of cycles through these different stages of sleep, slowly becoming a little bit more in the lighter stages of sleep and that dreaming REM sleep in the morning, sort of like in the early hours of the morning. Your brain tends to want that deep sleep first. And it sort of cycles through these different stages and sort of goes from deep sleep to dreaming sleep, deep sleep to dreaming sleep, all the way through the night. And so we can usually see that there's a number of those different cycles. Everybody's cycle is slightly shorter or longer, depending on just the way they are. But also if they have been a little sleep deprived, sometimes what we might see is the dreaming sleep. They might get a little bit of dreaming sleep very quickly before going into deep sleep. or if you have a neurological or a sleep disorder, something like narcolepsy, for example, which it's where your brain wants to switch into dreaming sleep very rapidly. And sometimes that can actually even occur during the day when you become sleepy. Mm. But that sometimes you might see some REM sleep very early on in a sleep period in some of those sorts of sleep disorders. But generally people would go from deep sleep into lighter sleep and cycle that through the night. And we also see that people typically get into a position in bed or wherever their sleep is that is sort of curled up and in a very comfy sort of posture. Usually we're lying down. And we see that actually a lot of different animals that sleep, particularly mammals, all get into a very habitual sort of sleep posture. So it's also really interesting, yeah, that not only is that sort of people have habits around how they sleep. So they like to have certain types of blankets, they like a certain type of bed, or they like a fan on. But generally there are some common threads. Everybody would prefer to have a cooler room than a warm run. And in fact, that's better for your sleep. Usually people like to have some kind of covering over them. And usually it's sort of in a comfortable, curled up sort of position that a lot of people will sleep in. Some people kind of are fully stretched out, but there's usually an habitual way that you go about your sleep.
Yeah.
And we form those sort of habits quite early on in life.
Yeah, that's interesting because, like, I find I always sort of tend to sleep one particular way over the other. Like, I can sleep both, but there's one that's definitely preferred, or I tend to sleep better facing one way over the other. And it's probably just that built up over time, you know, doing it over and over again.
Totally. So I think there's a full habit there. And I think the other reason why people sometimes, if they get into a new environment, they find it really hard to sleep. So, you know, you've gone away on holiday, you're in this wonderful hotel room or Airbnb, and then you get into this comfy bed and you can't sleep. And
or
you find the next morning you're kind of like, gosh, you know, I just tossed and turned and I couldn't get comfy. But maybe the second or third night you're fine. So there's often an acclimatization of a new place and a new bed and a new environment, and that's totally normal. Also as we sort of transition between seasons, particularly at the moment where we're having some sort of odd warm weather and some of the nights are a little bit warmer, as you're coming into spring, we get that weird, like some nights you're feeling a bit hotter than you normally might and some nights you're kind of cool. And so you're sort of adjusting the bedclothes a lot more during these sort of transition phases to get comfortable. And a lot of that is about regulating the temperature and some of your physiology to the optimal range for sleep, but also some of it is just purely habit and what you're trying to kind of like changing some of those micro habits to suit your environment.
Yeah, because I feel like you almost train yourself in certain ways as well to sort of expect sleep, like whether it's a certain time of day or maybe like, you know, might read a book before bed every night or something like that. So your brain kind of almost associates like that activity or the environment with sleep. Is that something that you sort of see in research as well?
Absolutely. And I think this is something that's really overlooked as adults. We are sort of often told as new parents to develop these sleep routines for children. You know, give all these signals to your baby that it's time that they should be settling down and going to sleep. So, you know, we give them a nice warm bath, we give them a feed, and then we wrap them up and put them into bed. And all of those signals tell the body and the brain to gradually relax, sleep is coming, and to sort of prepare them ready to go into sleep. Well, as adults, we rush around like crazy things, trying to get all these jobs done in the evening. Sometimes we're doing homework or answering emails or working right up until sort of bedtime. We might have to, or we might be enjoying some Netflix shows, or we might be, you know, doing something social. And we don't really allow ourselves that time, that sort of bedtime routine, and then get cross with ourselves for jumping into bed and then not being able to fall asleep straight away. So I think the baby bedtime routine for adults is something we should be doing. And exactly the sorts of things that you were saying, they're going to be different for each person. So some people it might be a nice herbal tea and a read. Some people like to have a shower at night. Some people go through removing their makeup and sort of doing a facial routine every night. All of those things help people get ready for the process of sleep, sort of relaxing, signaling to the body. And I totally agree. I think reading a not too exciting book,
yes,
right before bed
no
is
thrillers.
A really good way. Yeah, really good way to relax you and, really signal to you that there's a boundary, that you're about to go into sleep. You're putting your day aside. And you're getting ready to go to sleep. And I think that's really important to give yourself that little bit of time. So you sort of want to say to yourself, right, I want to turn the light out and start trying to go to sleep at, say, 11 o'clock at night. Then I really should probably be starting to prepare to get into bed at 10, and really sort of starting that process much earlier. And I should listen to my own medicine because I don't always do it. But it is something I think we should strive for.
Yeah. And I mean, if you are sort of in that boat where you just haven't been getting enough sleep, maybe it's a whole week where you've just it's not worked for you. You've got that less than 6 hours. It's your sleep hygiene's all out the window. What impact does having too little sleep for periods of time or even, multiple nights have on us?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And I suppose I want to caveat this by saying it's a little bit different for everybody. Some people will find that they really perform optimally at that sort of 7.5-8 hours sleep a night range, and if they dip down below that, they start to notice some of these changes. And some people are really happy sitting at that 6.5 hours, and they only notice changes if their sleep dips down less than that. So I think this is something, it's really hard to kind of say hard and fast when you get only a certain amount of sleep. It's really for each individual person. They'll know when they start to not quite have enough sleep to be performing well. And usually the first signs are feeling unrefreshed when you kind of wake up, feeling a little tired during the day, feeling sleepy, the kind of sleepiness that just hangs with you all day. A lot of people will then, of course, reach for things like caffeine and coffee and tea to kind of make them feel a little bit better. So that's another sign that perhaps you're feeling a little bit sleepy. Although coffee, of course, is one of those things that people have and is highly enjoyable and social. And so it's one of those things as well that's sometimes a bit hard to know. Are you being social or are you desperately need your coffee to get by? So that's another thing just to sort of think about. But generally, if you're dipping down, as you say, below your optimum for a good period of time, maybe you've gone into a busy week of, lots of stuff on in your life, you'll find that you could be a little bit more irritable. You find that there's some mood changes often where you're just a little, sometimes you feel a little bit more stressed than you might normally. And you'll find that you're a bit slower. Sometimes it's harder to remember things. Sometimes you're just a little bit sort of slower on the uptake in terms of being able to kind of retain information. Or you've discovered that you're less able to problem solve as well. Often people sort of find that there's you sort of feel a bit more overwhelmed when you're tired and a bit sleep deprived. That sometimes when you have a good sleep and you get, you kind of get back some more of those hours that you've lost, suddenly the world seems a bit more rosy and everything will be okay. So I really do think that there's a range of, or we know from the research, there's a range of effects, both cognitive ones to do with your sort of performance. There's ones around mood and how you're feeling. And generally it's you'll feel a bit more down, a bit more flat, a bit more irritated, a bit more stressed. there's also effects on your physical performance. So if you're tired and you haven't kind of slept well, you often find that perhaps if you go to the gym a lot, you'll notice that you're not able to pull the same kind of weights or run as fast, or you just don't have the stamina. So there's a range of sort of different kinds of effects, and also it can affect different people at different times. So not always will having a night of 6 hours sleep, and say that's really low for you, that might not always have lots of consequences attached to it. So I think there's also that thing that I don't want people to panic and worry if occasionally they have sort of a shorter sleep. Sometimes that's just the way it is. It'll build up sleep pressure for you over the day, and you'll probably have a great sleep that night. So I wouldn't worry about it, but it's, as you say, if this is continuing for a really long time, there can be some of those more insidious effects.
Yeah, and I think the sort of response for a lot of us when we are having those nights where maybe you only get that 4 or 5 hours of sleep is we try to catch up on it, whether it's a nap in the afternoon or a sleep in on the weekend or things like that. But is it actually possible to catch up on sleep?
That's a really good question, and it's actually one that's debated quite a lot in our field. Some people see sleep as a bit more fluid, and some people see it more as like a bank where you sort of get a sleep debt and then you pay it back. Mm-hmm. And it's probably somewhere in the middle. Obviously, our behaviours and the way our physiology is set up allows for times for us to not have a lot of sleep, and sometimes for us to sleep in, you know, and often that's quite changeable. I think the key things to probably be thinking about when you're trying to catch up is that a nap can be absolutely very helpful, but you've got to think about will it impact your sleep that night. So sometimes if you're really sleep deprived, a fabulous nap on the, you know, sofa in the afternoon, just, you know, for half an hour or something, just picks you up, makes you feel much better, and doesn't impact your ability to get to sleep that night. But for some people that will. So you want to kind of think maybe it's worthwhile just staying awake a little bit longer, not having that nap, holding on to that sleep pressure, and just going to bed a little bit earlier. That might be a better solution for you. That's not always possible if, say, you're a shift worker or you're just meeting friends late for dinner, you know. Mm. You want to have perhaps that little nap just to give you that bit of a boost for the evening. I think when it comes to catch up on weekends, for example, what we would really recommend as sleep researchers is to think more about consistency with your sleep. Mm-hmm. I know that's really boring, but it's much better to try and get a more consistent amount of sleep during the week so that you don't have to catch up on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I say that because we know that there are consequences for your circadian rhythm if you try and sleep in too much on the weekend. And I'm talking, you know, hours and hours and hours, sleeping until, you know, 12 or something.
Yeah.
Because that'll make it just harder for you to get up on Monday morning, you know, at 7 a.m. and make you feel really rotten on Monday. So it's better to try and not shorten your sleep too much during the week if you can avoid it. You won't sort of feel so much like you need to catch up on the weekend. However, when you're on holiday, and when you don't have that, you know, requirement to get up early on Monday morning, I think that's a great opportunity to catch up on just sort of sleep, you know, generally, mm-hmm. And make sleep a priority. I think we don't do enough of the let's just have sleeping holidays. instead, you know, we often go on holidays and are more busy on holidays than what we are during regular. So I totally advocate for the idea of having, you know, some periods of time where you, just really focus on getting great sleep, going to bed early, catching up that way, kind of setting yourself up really well for the new year, for example, rather than thinking about trying to swing too much or relying on sleeping in on weekends, because it's not necessarily going to be the best way for you to kind of catch up and recover.
Yeah, totally. And I'm a serial napper, so I'm just a bit known for the afternoon nap. But I've sort of found that, everyone's a little bit different. And this is the fun thing I think I found about conversations with people about naps, is that, like, trying to figure out if there's a successful way to nap. Because for me, I've definitely done it before. I've had like an hour and a half nap, or fallen asleep after 6 p.m. and then been totally fine to go to bed. But then there's other people who will say, I can't nap, or I feel way worse when I wake up, or maybe I can't do it for more than 20 minutes or things like that. Is there some general advice around naps, or, is there something we should just, like you're saying, avoid and just sort of push through to get the better, overnight sleep?
Yes, probably, as you say, very individual. And so I would encourage people to not be afraid to try things out, and to kind of work out what works best for you. People will generally kind of know, but I wouldn't put any hard and fast rules too much, and just say try what works best for you. Probably the only rules I would say is that we do know that when you wake up from a nap, if you have to perform straight away, so if you're in a job where napping is something that is important because you're working really long shifts, or you're trying to catch up because you're in some kind of industrial or organizational environment that's quite that shift work kind of dominant environment, then it would really depend on what kind of role you've got. So if when you wake up from your nap you have to perform at an extremely high level, just be aware that you've got to allow yourself a little bit of time to wake up, because there is this thing called sleep inertia, where your body essentially doesn't want you to wake up. It wants you to keep sleeping.
Yeah.
And so that groggy feeling as you begin to wake up, particularly if you are quite sleep deprived, it is basically serving to try and push you to go back to sleep. So it will take a little bit of time for you to wake up. If you're someone like a firefighter, or a doctor in an emergency room, you want to be allowing yourself a little bit of time to wake up before going back onto shift. Those naps can be extremely helpful, but they're just going to have that little bit of a lag in your performance, say for, half an hour or something afterwards. So it's just being sort of aware of not doing safety critical things immediately on waking. But for the average person at home having the nana nap on the couch of an afternoon, where they've got plenty of time to wake up afterwards, I think can be a glorious thing, as you've discovered. But you're right, they're going to be totally different dependent on the person. And I have come across lots of people that just sort of say, look, I hate napping, I just don't nap well, I find it really hard to nap, and then there are others like yourself who have them as a regular part of their everyday life and really enjoy them. So I think it is a very individual kind of thing.
Yeah, my sister gets mad at me because she knows as soon as if I lay horizontal on the couch, I will fall asleep, and she's always like, "You're always asleep." And you were sort of talking before about how, people will reach for things like coffee or maybe sugar to sort of get them through that early morning or, 2 p.m. slump through the day, particularly if they didn't get enough sleep the night before. But is there, I guess, a long-term impact if you're doing that over a long period of time where you're always reaching for something to give you the boost rather than getting it from the sleep itself?
Yeah, I mean, we would always say, prioritize the sleep so that you don't end up needing those sort of fatigue countermeasures or things to make you feel better. But there are lots of workplaces and professions where people just aren't able to get a lot of sleep. Shift workers, I mentioned earlier, just the fact that people are working at night and having to sleep during the day, it's never optimal. The sleep is never as good during the day as at night. And so things like reaching for coffee and caffeine can be a really great strategy to kind of help you through. And they really do have great alerting effects. And a lot of workplaces, advocate for them because they do improve safety and that kind of thing in the workplace. Mm. Of course, yes, if you are a chronic user and a very heavy user of caffeine, it does have impacts on your cardiovascular system. It can make you feel jumpy and increase heart palpitations and those sorts of things. So I suppose it's being aware of perhaps using caffeine in a strategic way. If you're someone that, you know, really needs it, say for workplace, because of the kind of workplace that you're in, then I would use caffeine more around thinking, okay, I want to be alert and I want to make sure that I'm, you know, getting through my night shift, rather than, you know, consuming coffee and just imbibing it all the time. Use it more sort of strategically so that you don't end up, you know, over consuming and having some of those other sort of negative effects. People sort of feel those negative effects sometimes if they have too many of those like workout supplements, like
a lot of them have got the pre-workout
caffeine in them. The pre-workouts, that's it, yeah. They've got caffeine in them, and that can really, and so because that's a big bolus of caffeine all at once, that can, you know, have some of those cardiovascular effects. Whereas often if you're having, you know, some instant coffee, you know, a teaspoonful of instant coffee isn't as that much more caffeine than, say, a strong cup of tea. So it's they're kind of more on the lower sides of caffeine rather than, say, the coffee that you might get in a coffee shop or from some of those sorts of pre-workouts or those little shots that you sometimes can get of, you know, energy drink shots and those kinds of things. So I think being aware of how much caffeine is in coffee and caffeine is in all those different drinks is probably a really good idea as well. And that way you'll know how much, you know, whether you're kind of over consuming or not, and sort of be aware of how your body feels when you're consuming. Caffeine will have an effect on your sleep if you consume too much or too close to bed. Again, it's quite individual. Some people just aren't that sensitive to caffeine, and others are really, really sensitive. And those people generally know who they are because they'll have encountered horrible situations where they've had a coffee in the morning and it keeps them up all day and night. So if you're very sensitive, then obviously it's important to monitor how much caffeine you're consuming so it doesn't impact your sleep. But it's something to keep mindful of, that the later you consume caffeine in the day, the more likely it will be to affect your sleep. But, you know, if you're someone who's having to drive home from work after a long night shift and you're really tired, then having that coffee is probably a good way to ensure that you're, you know, more likely to sort of stay alert and that kind of thing. And because you're so sleep deprived, you probably go to sleep when you get home anyway. So it's, I think, thinking about using caffeine in a more strategic way. And I was sort of thinking about that kind of more common sense way, you know it's going to affect if you have it too close to bed, but if you really need to have it because, you know, you're you know, you want to enhance your alertness, then I think it's important to have.
And I mean, I'm not personally a coffee drinker, but I find I get that too. I can almost tell you by without having to look at the clock that it's 2 o'clock because I will feel tired. Is there, I guess, an like alternative ways if you don't have access to something like a nap that you can combat tiredness?
Absolutely. I would get up and go for a walk outside. and I think, you know, and again, you know, not everybody has that opportunity. You know, you're not always living or working in an environment that you can do that. But I think if you have the opportunity, rather than reaching for a coffee, to get up and go for a little walk in the sunshine, even if it's a cloudy day, you'll be getting nice bright light. And that in itself is alerting and just gives you that little lift and gives you a mood lift as well. And often just a quick little, you know, walk in the garden or around the block, or if you're at uni, you know, kind of have a little walk around the grounds. Those kinds of, I suppose, little breaks will have quite a good benefit. They've not actually done studies where they've put, say, you know, coffee against a break, you know, to see which one stacks up better.
Yeah, okay.
Pro- probably your coffee would win, because you'd get the boost to your reaction time and everything from the psychoactive, content of the caffeine. But there's something really good about getting outside, I think, for a little walk, a little break in the afternoon, that can really boost your mood and your alertness.
Yeah, I've definitely been found in the library before, just sort of having a quick 5 minutes of shutting my eyes when I'm just feeling really tired. Because I've always found it's, rather than that sort of thing when you're pushing through reading something and you're basically falling asleep, I'd rather just shut my eyes and then, get back to it 10, 15 minutes later. And it's kind of amazing how much of a boost that gives you, I found.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that would be the other way. So instead of kind of getting up and being active, to sort of shut off and have a little nap for a minute, that's also pop your head down, set your, watch alarm for 10, 15 minutes or something and wake up. Or combining them, having a quick little nap and then going for a walk and coming back. Like those kinds of breaks, depending on what works best for you, I think will give just such a boost to your alertness and mood that it'll get you through those periods, that sort of post-lunch dip, where really what it is a dip in your circadian rhythm in the early afternoon. And so it is a biological drive to have a little bit of there is a kind of a slowdown, a little bit of a biological drive to feel sleepy in the afternoon. So it's also not something to beat yourself up about if you need to put your head down and have a quick little nap.
Yeah, because I've often thought, have I not been getting enough sleep? Is my iron low or something like that, because I feel tired in the afternoon? But then it feels like no matter what I do, it's always 2 o'clock. Oh, yeah, I feel a little bit sleepy.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, check out those other things. Make sure your iron levels and things are good. But, yeah, if you still are feeling a bit sleepy, it's probably just your circadian rhythm telling you that, it's the post-lunch dip time.
Yeah. And so what are, I guess, your tips for getting the best sleep that we can?
Yeah, I think probably number one is that consistency piece. And that fits really well with our circadian rhythm in terms of that predictability of, if you're going to bed and getting up at the same sorts of times every day, it means that a whole lot of other circadian, daily rhythms will flow from that. So I'd say number one tip, try to be consistent around your going to bed and waking up times. That's not going to work for everybody, because everyone's got different kinds of jobs, and particularly if you have to work at night. Then other things to think about would be to make your sleeping space nice and cool and dark and quiet.
Yeah.
So some people are able to change the actual environment around. So some people are lucky enough to have fans or air conditioners to make their room cool. But other ways, especially as it's starting to get hotter as we go into summer in the next few months, having a wet flannel or something like that with you will help cool you down on those hot nights. Having a dark room, so as best you can, blocking out the light from coming in, that particularly if you've got street lights or anything like that, that light coming through curtains, that will keep you awake at night. So blocking out any of the light coming in, blocking out light coming in especially as the light is getting earlier and earlier, sunrise is getting earlier.
Yeah.
Blocking that out. And if you're a shift worker, you want to try and block out, because obviously you're trying to sleep during the day, so you want as dark room as possible. And then the quiet. And it is really hard in some environments to get that quiet sleep because of busy roads, or you're trying to sleep during the day, or you've got a noisy household if you're living with housemates or family. And so things like earplugs, find ones that are comfortable and fit you well. There's a range of different kinds of earplugs on the market, can be wonderful in helping you reduce that, outside noise that can wake you up. Other people do like having a fan on, or other sort of white noise generating devices. Some people go to sleep with sort of music playing that is just in the background, and that can block out some of the sort of sudden noises that can wake you up.
Yeah.
But really that cool, dark, quiet is really important, and the consistency if you can.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that makes sleep the hardest is, ironically, when we probably need it the most is when we're stressed, or, you know, around things like exam times, when we have a lot of pressure on us. It can be times, you know, when you're trying to go to sleep, but your brain is just going around and around and around in circles and you can't quite seem to get there. How can we make sleep work for us during those times where we're sort of, I guess, heightened?
It is really hard, and it's still something that I struggle with from time to time. If you've got a big presentation coming up, or you've got a grant due or an assignment due, and you know that you've got your brain's just churning with lots of different things. I think it's some of those things like a bedtime routine is really helpful, allowing yourself some time for sleep. If you get to bed and you find that, you know, the reading of your favorite book or all those sorts of things don't help, then I think it's just trying to not allow yourself to slip into that catastrophizing that can happen, where you then start to tell yourself all sorts of bad things are going to happen because you haven't had enough sleep. So I think it's really to be mindful of that and to be kind to yourself. You'll probably have more sleep than what you think you've had, and you will probably get through the next day okay, and you'll just sleep much better the following night. I think it's when it goes into a more chronic scenario is when you're sort of moving more into that insomnia, when you're having multiple nights where you're really struggling sleeping. Sometimes there's been a stressful event that is playing on you. And then I think it's really important to go and see a sleep psychologist who can help you manage all of that. You don't have to suffer in silence. And I would say that about all sort of sleep disorders. If you feel you have a concern, I would go and talk to a health professional. We have fabulous sleep psychologists these days who can help with the sort of behavioral side, with insomnia and those sorts of things. And then also physicians who can help with sleep doctors who can help with the sleep apnea, or I touched on that other disorder, narcolepsy, and other sort of sleep disorders that exist, which can be really insidious and can really affect your daily life, your mood and your performance and those sorts of things. So I wouldn't suffer in silence, and so it's really hard when you have those kind of stressful moments and wake up early or find it really difficult to get to sleep. If they're one-offs, try not to worry too much and think about kind of getting through the next day. But if it's something more chronic, then I would go and get help.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate for I've had nights where I've had maybe 3 hours sleep. It's just been one of those nights where it's just nothing's worked and I'm supposed to work the next day and I go, you know what? No, I'm sick. I'm not coming in. Because at the end of the day, your sleep is how you function. If you can't function, you can't be at work. You can't be successful. You won't be able to participate in the way that you need to be. And I feel like it's equivalent of being unwell because, you're just not there. You're not firing at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think, each situation is going to be, slightly different, but I absolutely think that, making sleep a priority and, advocating for your sleep is really, really important.
Well, thank you so much, Siobhan. It's been such a pleasure having you on and sharing all of your expertise with us.
No worries at all.
We've reached the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please do subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Spotify so that other students can find us too. Leave us a cheeky review while you're there. You can also head over to our Instagram where you can follow us at uoa.oncampus. We'll have videos of our guests and exciting podcast news there, as well as all of the information you'll need about what's happening on campus. We would love to hear from you, so please send us a DM there and let us know what you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you think. And I will catch you next fortnight for another episode of Take Note.
Take take.
Take
note.
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 Take note.
Take note.
Take note.
Take note.
This is a UOA on campus production.